This is Jeannie Drisco, bringing you an episode of The Art and Soul of Healing. Today on the wings of Alliance for Natural Health USA, we will be flying to Atlanta, Georgia, to meet with Brian Glotzbach. Brian is an architectural engineer with specialty in structural engineering. After flipping careers and becoming a soft tissue therapist, Brian used his background in structural engineering to assess highly trained athletes with sports injuries, helping them rehab and to prevent them from future injuries. Brian has had a fascinating career working with NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball teams and working with Olympic athletes. I'd like to welcome Brian Glotzbach. So welcome, Brian, to the Art and Soul of Healing.
Hi, Jeannie. How are you? Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Hi, I'm doing great. So you have such an interesting background. I know you are an architectural engineer by training and work for a large prestigious engineering firm in the U.S., but what led you to flip careers?
I was actually just starting to burn out. I was just getting tired of the whole engineering aspect, and I wanted to start working with people, helping people. And so actually, you know, you probably don't remember this, but I called each one of you guys and talked to you because I was trying to decide which route I wanted to take. And you were all saying the medicine route. Going to medical school, that within 10 years or so, by 2000, physicians were going to be working in groups and they weren't going to be working by themselves anymore. And that's, so I kind of got discouraged from going that route and chose the route that I ended up going and actually never looked back. I have just a tremendous amount of fun in the world I'm in.
So it was just purely burnout that led you away from architectural engineering. Is that right?
Yeah, it was. I'm too much of a people person. I got tired of sitting in front of a computer and designing, you know, with meetings with other people. But most of the work was done from a design aspect. And I just wanted to deal with people.
Oh, that's great. So you call yourself a massage therapist, but you really take your structural engineering background and apply it to the structure of the body. Isn't that true?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I didn't lose a beat really with the whole engineering piece of it. It's something that's been with me forever. I just don't engineer buildings anymore. I engineer bodies.
That's great. Well, how does this apply to sports injuries? I know you said in your bio that you just knew you had to deal with sports injuries.
Well, the structure of the body is very similar to a building. If one corner of a building settles, all the load shift to that lower corner. Same thing happens to the body when you've got a leg length discrepancy in the system. Some people will say, well, you know, that's not true. Or lots of people have leg length discrepancies, you know, that are more mechanical in nature and not really functional. But I've been looking and tracking this stuff for years and years. And there is a sequence of injuries that follow structural imbalance. Let's say that a cornerback has a left leg that's longer than the right. He's going to be faster to his short leg side when he turns and goes in a pass route. But he's going to be slower going to the other side. So if I can correct that imbalance, I can make him just as fast to either side. See, in my world, I believe that the adage, there's a sports adage that says when you get to 30, you're over the hill. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not true. I've worked with guys that are over 30 that are having their best years ever. So I don't buy into that. I think that if people just don't know how to fix the little tiny idiosyncrasies, the biomechanical irregularities that happen, and they don't get that necessarily in the training room.
And this could apply to all of us who are aging and trying to keep moving too.
Absolutely. I see it every day in the clinic. I only work with people who have, they're in pain, they want to improve performance. Those are the only people we pretty much screen people so that, those are the people that I get to work with. Those are the most fun.
Yeah. Well, you ended up getting a master's in sports medicine from Georgia State. Why did you go that route?
Well, athletic trainers control the training rooms in college and professional sports. And I wanted to work with athletes, and that was the most direct way of getting to athletes that I could see, because you can't just write a resume and get on with the professional sports team. Players typically bring people into the training rooms, and they'll start working with you, and then they will introduce you to coaches, and that's typically how people get into the training rooms. You got to come in from the inside. You can't just expect to send somebody a resume and get in.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So it was really just to improve your calling card, so to speak.
I learned a tremendous amount about sports injuries, and my engineering background just taught me that what I needed to do was, I saw a lot of holes in the mainstream rehab model while I was in school. And it was a big awakening for me. And my goal ever since I got out of grad school was to correct some of the holes I saw in the system. And so my long-term goals are to change the mainstream rehab model.
Oh man, that's a big one. Can you give an example of something you saw that got repeated and repeated that you knew was inaccurate?
One of my biggest pet peeves is with knee injuries. They spend all their time in rehab. It's still today. I would call it an urban legend. They spend so much time trying to strengthen the VMO. And the VMO is the medial quad. And they believe that it's the first thing to atrophy, and it's the first thing that they need to strengthen to pull on the medial side of the patella in order to get the knee to track straight. And the question I would have is, why don't you just straighten the knee? If you straighten the knee can't track incorrectly. So I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to straighten the knee, and now I can do it. I've been doing it for years and years and years.
Oh, that's so interesting. So after you finished your master's, or during that time you were working on it, you opened up a private practice in Atlanta. And this is where you started working your magic in the area sports teams. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's some really interesting things that have happened. The first professional athlete I ever worked with was a guy who actually came to me through a friend of mine in Buffalo. He was working with some of the Buffalo Bills players. And the guy down here was complaining because he was having issues with back then they used to call it osteitis pubis, or they were calling it sports hernia yet, but that's where it progressed. And he just couldn't get through it. And he was complaining to his friend in Buffalo, and his friend up there was saying, oh, I'm working with this great guy up here. Wait a minute. He went to school in Atlanta. Let's see if he knows somebody. And so that's when I got the call from the first guy I ever worked with that was a pro athlete. And of course, once I helped him, then he brought other Atlanta Falcons players in. And then in 1997, Atlanta got a new head coach. And the first thing he wanted to do, he kept the sports medicine team intact, but he wanted a soft tissue piece to follow along with sports medicine. So he put the strength coach in charge of making that happen. And the players caught wind of it and said, hey, if you're going to do this, here's the guy we want. So the next thing I knew is I had an interview, and I had just gotten out of grad school, and I knew how to speak the language that he wanted. And he wanted to hear about us being an integral part of the team and not overstepping our bounds. And So the next thing I knew is I was on staff with the Atlanta Falcons. And of course I brought other people in our group in, and the next thing we knew was our group here had the contract with the Atlanta Falcons. And then the next year, the Atlanta Hawks got a new head trainer, and he called the Atlanta Falcons and said, hey, you know, we want to add this to our group. Who should we contact? And they said, well, hey, you know, as long as it doesn't cross paths with what we're trying to do, call these guys. And so the next thing we knew was the next year in 1998, we staffed with the, not just the Falcons, the Atlanta Hawks. And then a couple of years later, I helped the Brace chaplain. I helped his son, who was in a high school football player. And he introduced me to some Braves players. And that was a very strange situation because the Atlanta Braves had three guys that are now in the Hall of Fame. And those three guys went to the GM and said, hey, we want Brian on staff. And the next thing I knew is I got a head trainer. But here's some of my frustrations with the system that I've run into over the time. My first day on staff with the Braves, the head trainer took me in his office and he said, look, I'm not happy that you're here. You got jammed down my throat. You're here to work on three people. If I even see you talk to anybody else, you're fired. But I'm in the training room. So Everybody sees me and they're working. And by the end of the first day, there were players asking who I was. And by the end of the week, I got called back into the head trainer's office because this is totally out of hand. You were only here to work on three people, and now everybody wants to work with you. So,
and it's all your fault.
Yeah, I've had head coaches for guys that I travel with run into me in the hotel and ask me if they can talk to me, and pretty much tell me the same thing. You know, I like to think I've got the best sports medicine staff in football, and the best that money can buy. And when I find out my players are going around the system and bringing in outside medical help, that really makes me angry. So if you just go away and don't come back, that'd be great. But what the players do in their spare time with these other teams is theirs to do with. So
yeah, absolutely. And if you're helping them and the other players see that you've helped them, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, it's been a frustration. And the way that I see it, and it's actually, you know, I feel like a projected first round draft pick who actually didn't have the right credentials and got drafted in the third round. So I've always I've always played with a chip on my shoulder.
You know, sounds familiar.
It's actually been, you know, one of the best things that could have happened to me, because when I was in grad school, I saw what the system was like. I saw the holes, and ever since then, I've just been reverse engineering every single injury I come across, and figured out how to prevent the injuries. And now, I mean, if one of the players I was working with had, oh, I had just mentioned sports hernia, if they had sports hernia or a hamstring strain or an Achilles tendon rupture or even a non-contact ACL sprain, I would be blown away. I would be scratching my head knowing that anything can happen in contact sports, but how could that have happened to one of my guys? And So the guys that I deal with, they just don't get hurt. And it has to do with balancing structure and taking adverse situations out of the equation so that they have balance, that their hips are balanced correctly, their knees are balanced correctly, their shoulders are correct, their ankles are strong, and their ankles are functionally stable, that any past injuries they've had are well taken care of. See, in my world, I would say that muscle tissue should feel like filet mignon. If you put if you put a 2-inch high filet on a countertop, you should be able to push right straight through that filet all the way to the tabletop, because there's no fibrous element in the muscle tissue. It's soft and supple. And that's the way all the muscle in the body should feel.
Huh. I've never heard that before, but it does make sense.
Well, see, even from, before we move on, let me just throw this out there. If 100% of the muscle is like filet mignon, you're maximizing full strength. Let's say you strained a hamstring and 10% of the muscle was damaged. That 10%, that means you're at 90% strength, because you've got scar tissue or adhesion that's holding 10% of that muscle in a dysfunctional place. In the rehab model, what they would do is they would try to control inflammation, they would control the pain, they would try to improve range of motion, and once you got pretty much full pain-free range of motion, then they would move to endurance strength and then power strength. But there's still an adhesion in that muscle. And if there is 10% of that muscle that's not functioning correctly, maybe they're going to push past that 90 range, and maybe they get to 92 because there's been some increases. But they're not going to get to 100 easily. Because that scar is holding things together. Now, if they manipulated that scar and took all the adverse biomechanical problems away so that hamstring could reach its full potential strength-wise and not have adverse tension on it, then they can get up to maybe 97 or 98% almost immediately. And then they only have to rehab 3% to get them back to 100% strength.
Now, are you doing this with alignment? Are you doing it? How are you doing this?
Let's go back to the hamstring strain. The last thing I'm concerned with is the hamstring strain. If somebody came to me with a hamstring problem, that's the last thing I'm concerned with. I'm doing it. I want to take all the adverse tension off of that hamstring. See, the mainstream rehab model would say, oh, that's too bad. Hamstrings, that's just part, a hamstring strain is just part of the game. And I would say, no, that's not true. If one of my guys had a hamstring strain, I would be mortified. And so what I do is I keep the tensors off of that hamstring, because I really believe that a hamstring doesn't just fail, you know, just for no reason. Just, oh, you're doing the same thing you did 1,000 times before, and all of a sudden today it fails. Mm-hmm. I believe what happens is that alignment changes, and as the alignment changes, it stresses certain muscle groups because now there's more adverse tension on them than there should be. So what happens over the course of months, maybe years, that hamstring has been slowly breaking down until one day you do the same thing you've done 1,000 times mm-hmm. before, and it fails. And so I believe that more important than strength or range of motion is keeping the adverse tension off of these critical muscle groups and keeping them in a place where they're not slowly breaking down.
Huh. So it is a lot of alignment on your part. I mean, you're teaching them probably too, as you go, what they should feel and see in their own structure. Is that
absolutely
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. These guys, they know, they'll come in and they'll say, my left leg's longer than my right. Oh, my left ankle is unstable. I feel like my right knee is twisted. You know, they're going to, and I can look right at it and say, you know, well, you know, you're right on. I've taught them how to understand their body and they can tell me what's going on and actually know. I mean, I do about a 2-minute evaluation. I'll get guys that come in and they'll say, I'll say, well, what's going on? And they'll say, well, so-and-so said not to tell you that you're going to evaluate me and you're going to tell me what's going on. And I can, in 2 minutes time, I'll look at them standing. I'll put them supine, look at certain landmarks. I'll look at them prone. And then I'll tell them, I'll say, oh, you know, if you've got a problem, it's here, 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 or here. And then they'll start laughing, you know, because I nailed one of the issues that they were having. And so to me, that's a lot of fun.
It's almost like a game.
It's the puzzle. And that's what I tell people. You know, I work puzzles all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. Do they have to have any strength training? I mean, you said that traditionally most people focused on strength training and range of motion. But when you're realigning, do you have to then strengthen the structure so they stay that way?
Well, that's a great question. You know, it's if they strength train after their body is aligned, then they're enhancing things just exponentially. They're going to hold things in place. But if they're strengthening around dysfunctional structure that can be easily changed, then they're not maximizing their time in the weight room.
Ah, that makes sense. Absolutely. So you've probably helped a lot of people who thought that their careers might be at the end.
Oh, it's so fun, because I had one guy who at 38 years old, you know, and which is far past the spectrum for a professional athlete, you know, still running 4.440s, and they'd make him run it over and over and over and over because they couldn't believe that he could run that fast. So he might have slowed down just a little bit since he was a rookie, but he was just a phenomenal physical specimen. And I'd been working with him for probably 12 years at that point. So he was always in perfect alignment, always, you know, every aspect that of performance that I could tweak out of structure was handled. And so he's kind of my benchmark, But there's so many people that I've seen this in over the years. It's why they spend the money and fly me in.
Mm-hmm. So this really exploded for you, and you're involved with athletes all over the country now. Do you travel all the time?
Yeah, I travel a lot. I travel right now. I travel with NFL guys, and I was in Kansas City, as you know, every Monday and every Friday. So I would come in one day after the game and then 2 days before the game, and I would work with these guys, but it was always, they were hiring me individually. So they were paying me, it wasn't through the team, and they were kind of, like I said, they were going around the system. But that's what they felt like they needed to do. Mm-hmm. And because they weren't getting what they needed from the sports medicine system. And a lot of times, especially in football, there's 53 guys on the team. So the trainers can't handle everybody. There's three trainers and maybe an intern. So they're looking at a lot of players. They can't spend a lot of time with people.
Yeah.
And yeah, so
sounds like conventional medicine.
Right. And you'd be surprised how people complain about that, that you don't really get quality time. These guys get quality time. They have to pay for it. They don't blink, because there are some guys that I've worked with that spend, they might spend $10,000 or $15,000 a week taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. But that $10,000 or $15,000 that they spend, they won't just have me come in. They'll fly in a bunch of people. That $10,000 or $15,000 that they spend is dwarfed by, a $50 or a $70 or a $100 million contract.
Yes. So how is Biomedical Edge Inc. different than your private practice?
It's pretty much the same. It's just what I bill under when I'm gone. It's just me for the most part, and anybody that I'm training, I teach under that letterhead too.
Okay. Well, you've taught, I believe, all over the world. Isn't that right?
I've taught, I've had some great experiences teaching, And it's been fun. I've developed my own program, but I'm tired of teaching to massage therapists. I'm not going to change the mainstream medical model teaching to massage therapists. Mm-hmm. So my focus right now is writing and trying to figure out a way to teach to Rehab World, which are the physical therapists, the athletic trainers, and, to even educate orthopedic surgeons. Those are the people that are going to make the difference eventually. And they're people that don't know anything about what I do. And I taught that 100-hour massage training to the sports medicine staff at the University of Georgia. And that's when I realized that. They don't know how to handle the soft tissue injuries away from range of motion, so stretching and strengthening. And that's pretty much what happens in the rehab world. They believe that everything can be corrected by improving range of motion and strengthening. The strength aspect, as I kind of explained earlier, can be enhanced in an incredible way with just a little bit of preliminary work. And that's what I'd like to change.
I see. That makes sense.
The holy grail in sports medicine right now is non-contact ACL sprains. Non-contact ACL sprain would be, you're just running down the field and you make a cut and your ACL is sprained and you have to have surgery. No, That's what I actually, in that that 2 months over the COVID shutdown, that was kind of my go-to. And so I dug up every piece of research literature I could find on non-contact ACL sprains. And they all have the same basic philosophy on and essentially the same basic outcome as to what is actually causing the problem, but they don't know how to fix the problem. And they're regurgitating, and you know, I think they're just regurgitating the same information over and over and over. And I think that the problem is much simpler. I contacted an acquaintance who has a biomechanics lab in California about that. And that's what they had done over the break too. He kept everybody on staff in his lab, and they were working on that piece too. Now I know that they are they have all the cameras and the biomechanics, the top of the line biomechanics information. This is a group that really does a lot of work collecting data, but they're very, very strength oriented, which is along with the same rehab model. And I believe it's so much simpler. I believe it's an alignment issue and it can be easily corrected. And along the same lines as that hamstring strain that I talked about earlier, I believe it's an alignment issue that causes breakdown of the ACL, places the ACL under adverse strain it puts it under adverse tension. And over the course of time, it just slowly breaks down until one day you've done the same thing you've done 10,000 times before. You make that cut and it fails. So,
Were you able to convince the people in California in the lab that?
No, I can't convince anybody. Mm. You know, I mean, they believe they have the answers, but I believe that the solution is so much simpler than strength. I believe that strength would enhance things, but I don't believe strength is really the problem. Imbalance and torsion and placing that ACL under adverse strain, that's the problem.
Well, you do need to keep writing about this. It sounds like it's really, really could impact a lot of people.
It's fun. That's what keeps it fun. And there's my engineering side coming right back. I see structure and it's fun to figure out ways to change structure to make things work. I had a mentor who was the guy had a PhD in English and a PhD in psychology, and was from Texas, big old Texas drawl. Had a master's in rehab science, but he made orthotics, and he used to say he could fix anybody. And he's the one that taught me to take a step back and just look at everything from a couple of feet away. Instead of, you know, our medical system wants to look at everything under a microscope. We get too close. We overcomplicate things. I really think they're a lot simpler than we really give the injuries credit. It's just a few simple things that can be corrected in a very short period of time that would make a huge difference.
Well, what are some of the important things for people like me to maintain healthy physical activity during aging? What can I do?
There are so many simple things you could do, Jeannie. You know, I like to tell, you know, the people in my private clinical practice, I always tell the people that I don't want you as a regular. You know, I want to fix you. I want to get you aligned. I want to teach you how to keep yourself aligned. And then I want you to use me for maintenance only. So I teach people how to do stuff like that. And I think one of the simplest things you could ever do, and it only costs you $3. Go down to the sporting goods store, buy a lacrosse ball, and use pain. That's, you know, that's one of the things that I tell people is use pain to tell you what's going on. If you've got low back pain, 100% of the time, it's an alignment issue that's happening in your hips. It has not a lot to do with your low back. Your sacral base is usually on an angle, which doesn't give your spine the ability to stack correctly. So it has to come out on a little bit of an angle, and all of a sudden everything starts to bark and you don't know what to do. If you got a lacrosse ball and you just laid down on the floor every time your low back started to hurt and worked just in the gluteal area, just worked everything there, almost an inverted L. So you would just lay down, and I would say just spend 8 or 10 seconds on a spot. And you're looking for a spot that's a little bit uncomfortable. So, or maybe a lot uncomfortable. There's not a lot back there you can really do any damage to. So if it really hurts, just roll away from it for a little bit. But you're just laying on your back with your knees in kind of a bent position, just looking for spots that hurt. And just stay on that lacrosse ball for 8 or 10 seconds, then move to another spot. And then there's a little spot along the belt line between the greater trochanter and the iliac crest that's soft tissue. And just, you have to roll on your side to get to that. So that's the L leg of that inverted L.
Okay.
If that's the only thing, there's other things that I would show people how to do that I really wouldn't want to talk about just over a voice conversation, because I'd want to make sure you were doing it correctly. But if you just did that one thing, that lacrosse ball would be the best thing, best $3 you've ever spent for any type of health issue, because it starts that alignment process. It may not take it all the way, but it gets it there in a really big way.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I happen to know that you had a brother with Down syndrome, Tim, who accompanied you at times when you met with the athletes. I think he became very popular with the athletes prior to his death. Can you tell us a little bit about Tim?
Oh, my gosh. Tim would come down and spend 10 days with me in Atlanta. He was in Chicago. So he would come down and spend 10 days with me in Atlanta every summer. And that was right about the time training camps were getting going. So guys would call and they'd say, hey, you know, can you meet me in Pittsburgh, or can you meet me in Tampa or wherever? And I'd say, well, hey, my brother's here. But, you know, if you buy his plane ticket, I'll pick up the rest. You know, I'll take care of the rest of everything else. And they'd say, oh, yeah, no problem. So they'd buy his plane ticket and we'd go down there. And he was a big hit with everybody. You know, and these guys would retire, and I wouldn't see them after they retired, but when they would come through Atlanta, they'd always come in and let me look at them and work with them. And the first thing they'd say when I saw them was, hey, how's Tim? You know, it wasn't, hey, how are you doing? It's good to see you. They'd say, how's Tim? So he made a bigger impact on them than I did.
That's great. Did you get into the Paralympics because of Tim?
No. It was part of a commitment I made with the people that selected me with the Olympic Committee. That you know, if I was going to supervise the massage effort in the sports medicine clinic for the Olympic Games, that they also wanted that same effort in the Paralympic Games. That was my one and only Olympics. I would never do that again. It was a great experience, but it was an entire summer of U.S. track and field trials, Olympics, and then Paralympics. It was an entire summer of making no money. But so, you know,
I bet it was interesting working with the Olympic athletes, though. That must have been something to see.
It was actually amazing. And what was even more fun was they had closed circuit cameras at each event. And so we had a bunch of TVs set up in the treatment area in the sports medicine clinic, so that if we had an athlete we were working with that was, maybe he was from Crete and he was wrestling on mat two at 2 o'clock, we could tune the TV into mat two at 2 o'clock and watch the guy wrestle. If somebody was fencing at 4:30, at a certain location, we could watch that. So we got to watch all the athletes that we were working with actually perform, in addition to actually working on them. That was the really interesting, fun part. We still have a map, and every athlete that came in, when they signed in, they put a pin in the country they were from, in their exact location where they lived. And so we still have this map in one of the hallways in our office of that that map with all the pins in it.
That's so fun. I'm going to have to come see that, Brian. Well, is there any other parting advice you can give me, all of my listeners?
I think the parting advice is there are people like me out there. You know, I mean, most people will say, I've dealt with orthopedists in the past that say, oh, I've had a massage. You know, my wife and I got side-by-side massages on the beach in Hawaii. And, you know, they don't really understand the type of soft tissue work that I deal with. And I think if you're looking for somebody, I have on my treatment table, people just come in their clothes and jump on the table. You know, I may use a little bit of lotion, maybe on an ankle or maybe on a calf, just roll their pants leg up. But I pretty much everything I do is through the clothes. You can find people like this. And I think what you have to ask is, do you deal with draping? And I think if they're saying, okay, climb underneath the sheet and start face down, then they're not really, it's not the same type of work I'm doing. You can find people that do structural work can really, really help you.
Well, I know that's true because I met one of your clients, an elite female athlete runner, and she said that you kept her running, and she's still running, I believe. You kept her running for years when, you know, some of our colleagues had stopped. So I know it's an important part.
I think don't let people tell you you can't. You just got to keep trying to find the right people until you find them. That's the same in every profession, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. Well, Brian, thank you so much for sharing this wonderful journey with us. And how can people find you?
They can find me in Atlanta. I'm at my clinic is called Body Mechanics. So they can find me there. That's the best way, is to just call the clinic. It's Body Mechanics. And
I will put a link on the Art and Soul of Healing website with your contact information.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And I learned a lot today. I didn't realize. But that's what you're supposed to be doing.
It's so much fun. Well, thanks, Jeannie. I really appreciate you letting me give you my spiel.
Thank you, Brian. I'm sure you'll all agree that was a fascinating interview. And a special shout out to the Alliance for Natural Health USA for standing in the gap for our health freedoms and for making it possible for us to enjoy integrative and functional medicine nutrition therapies. Go to the Alliance for Natural Health USA website and become a member today.